This podcast was researched by members of Fenians, Fremantle and Freedom Group, with assistance from the Immigrant Support Programme of the Irish Government. It was recorded on Wadjinuk Noongar land. We acknowledge the First Nations people of the land we walk upon. We pay our respects. We thank you and your ancestors for together sharing in our stories.
Let me tell you a story. A story of 62 brave men, taken from their homeland, Ireland, and in chains for fighting to free themselves and their country from a foreign ruler, the British Crown. This story will take us on an incredible journey from Ireland to Australia to the United States and beyond. It's a story of pain, suffering, courage, and grit. But above all, it's a story of hope. And what if I was to tell you that this story so happens to be true? Come along. Let me tell you of the Fenian 62. Now you may ask, what is a Fenian? The term Fenian hails back to the ancient Celtic times, 1,000 years ago, when pagan tribes ruled Ireland. One tribe that stood out was the Fianna, led by a warrior named Fionn Mac Cumhail, who on legend was reputed to be the fiercest and respected Fianna of all. Back in those times, Ireland was constantly being invaded from tribes from the north of Europe, and it was Mac Cumhail and his band of Fianna called upon to repel its invaders. As the Great Famine of 1845 swept through Ireland, leaving thousands dying of starvation, food growing on Irish soil continued to be exported to England, often under military guard, thereby leaving a legacy of bitterness and resentment among the survivors. Consequently, insurrection throughout the land, and with skirmishes between the British Crown, farmers and peasants erupting on a daily basis. Martial law was declared in Limerick, Tipperary and Kilkenny, while a bill suspending habeas corpus was rushed through the British Parliament, allowing authorities to round up unruly peasants and farmers and imprison them. It was during this dark period in Irish history the seed of Fenianism was sown.
Part 1. The Irish Uprising. Ireland, January 1866.
Please don't take him, I beg you.
Dennis Cushman, in the name of our gracious Queen, I'm arresting you for the treasonous activities and belonging to the Fenian Society. Take him away!
We've three children! I beg you, don't take him! Our children will starve, please! What in God's name am I going to do?
What's the matter with you, Kay?
They've taken our Dennis away, Maggie. They're accusing him of being a Fenian. Sure, our Dennis wouldn't harm a hair on a fly's head.
Sure. It's the same all over Waterford City. Men being dragged from their beds in the middle of the night.
My poor Dennis. God only knows what they're going to do to him.
Sure. It's all your man James Stephen's fault. Calling our men to arms to rid Ireland of Queen Victoria and her cronies.
It's not fair, Maggie. All we want is a free Ireland. And now look where it's gotten us.
Sure. Just like all the other uprisings, Kay. It's all over before breakfast.
What am I going to do, Maggie? How on earth am I going to feed three children without our Dennis?
Do what most Irish women do when their husbands are locked up for being a rebel.
And what's that, Maggie, I ask you?
Take up arms yourself and rid our country of the English scourge.
The following morning, Kate Cashman arrives at the local police station in the off chance of seeing her husband, Dennis.
I'm here to see my husband, Dennis Banbrick Cashman.
When was he brought in?
Last night.
Now, let me see. Dennis Banbrick Cashman, did you say?
That's right. Dennis Banbrick Cashman.
Ashley, you're too late.
What do you mean, mister? I'm too late.
He's on his way to Dublin, to Mountjoy Jail as we speak.
Mountjoy?
That's right. With the rest of them Fenian rabble.
My Dennis is no Fenian. Fenian. He's a freedom fighter.
Ah, well, you listen to yourself, woman. If I was you, I'd get me house in order. And as you're unlikely to ever see your Fenian bastard of a husband again.
What do you mean, mister? Never see him again?
He'll most likely end up in England. In Dartmoor or in Millibank Jail with the rest of them Fenian rabble. Where he'll never see the light of day again.
Oh, Jesus, don't say that, mister. Sure, he's a good man who wouldn't harm a fly.
Harm a flea, me arse. Sure, wasn't he on Dublin Castle's most wanted list?
No, don't say that, mister.
Go home, woman. The uprising is finished, and so is your husband.
And so the story goes on what would be another dark chapter in Irish history. Another failed uprising, with hundreds of Fenians arrested. And although quickly suppressed, nevertheless it would unleash a force for change that would gather momentum in the years that followed. Among those arrested, Dennis Cashman, John Flood, Edward Kelly, John Golden, Thomas Duggan, Joseph Noonan, and John Casey. Men who we'll get to meet later. Meanwhile, in army barracks throughout Ireland, several British soldiers aligned with the Fenians have now also been rounded up and charged with treason. These men are referred to by British authorities as soldier or military Fenians, who, unlike their civilian counterparts, are subject to cruel punishment by orders of their commanding officers, such as being flogged, followed by letter D for deserter, being branded onto their chests or arm, and then placed in solitary confinement for long periods on bread and water. Among them, Thomas Hassett, Michael Harrington, Thomas Darragh, Robert Cranston, Martin Hogan, James Wilson, men who we'll also get to meet later. Also among these British soldiers arrested is a poet, John Boyle O'Reilly. It was Fenian leader John Devoy who convinced the 20-year-old O'Reilly to turn rebel, and in doing so managed to recruit up to 80 of his fellow soldiers in the 10th Hussars to take up arms against his commanding officers. Devoy, 28, born in County Kildare, joined the French Foreign Legion in 1861 to gain military experience in anticipation an uprising was brewing. On his return to Ireland in 1865, Fenian Supreme Leader James Stephens contacted him, giving him the task of infiltrating the British Army in Ireland to recruit soldiers from their ranks into the Fenian organisation, which he did with great success. Stephens could not have made a better choice. Devoy, a strategist, resourceful and full of charisma, used these skills effectively to instill his republican ideals into the hearts and minds of Irish men enlisted in the British Army, at the same time having them swear allegiance to the Fenian oath.
I, in the presence of the Almighty God, do solemnly swear allegiance to the Irish Republic, now virtually established, and that I will do my utmost at every risk, while life lasts, to defend its independence and integrity, and finally, that I will yield implicit obedience in all things, not contrary to the laws of God, to the commands of my superior officers. So help me God. Amen.
By the time of the uprising, Devoy estimated there was 8,000 sworn Fenians among the ranks of the estimated 26,000 British troops stationed in Ireland. In February 1866, Devoy was arrested by British authorities during a raid on the Pillsworth's public house, James Street, Dublin, and sentenced to 15 years imprisonment for treason. We shall get to meet Devoy and O'Reilly again later. The arrested civilian Fenians await their fate at the hands of Dublin Castle, the seat of the British administration in Ireland, while military Fenians await their fate at the hands of the commanding officers. Court-martials are hastily set up in various army barracks throughout Ireland to try the military Fenians, while the civilian Fenians are tried in courts in the counties they were arrested in. By the time both court proceedings have concluded, the military and civilian Fenians have received sentences ranging from 5 years to the death penalty. Their crime? Wanting a free Ireland. At the military Fenians' trial, a judge calls out the men's sentences.
Robert Cairnston, death by hanging. Thomas Hassett, death by hanging. Michael Harrington, death by hanging. Thomas Darrath, death by hanging. Martin Hogan, death by hanging. James Wilson, death by hanging. John Boyle O'Reilly, death by hanging.
At the civilian Fenians' trials, the men are spared the death sentence, while sentences are proportioned to evidence given by spies and informers.
John Flood, 15 years. Flood, 32, son of a Dublin shipbuilder, one of a group of Fenians who helped Fenian supreme leader James Stephens escape from Richmond Jail, Dublin, who later fled to France. Flood was arrested during the Fenian raid on a British arms depot in Chester Castle, Liverpool. When asked by the judge if he had anything to say before his sentence was passed, Flood responded by saying, "My lords, if to love my country more than my life makes me a wretched man, then I am a very wretched man indeed."
Edward Kelly, life. Kelly, 26, born in County Cork and raised and educated in Boston, America. He returned to Ireland for the uprising. He was arrested during a skirmish with British troops in Kilcooney Woods, County Limerick.
Dennis Cashman, 7 years. Cashman, 25, born in County Waterford and father of three children. He loved art, literature and music. However, it was his skill in munitions making that saw him arrested and charged with treason.
John Sarsfield Casey, 5 years. Casey, 21, born in Mitchelstown, County Cork, came to the attention of the British authorities following a series of letters he wrote to local newspapers supporting Irish Home Rule, while using the nom de plume Gelty Boy. He was arrested when British authorities raided a public house in Cork City, where local Fenians had gathered for a meeting.
John Joseph Noonan, 7 years. Noonan, 25, born in County Cork, was a well-respected builder in the south of Ireland. He joined the Fenian movement in 1864, where he used his building skills to map the layout of various British army barracks located in Cork, Kerry and Killarney. He fled to France after British authorities issued a warrant for his arrest. He later showed up in London, where he was arrested while being transported back to Ireland to face trial. He made a daring escape from a moving train outside of London. The following day, he was arrested in the village of Atherstone.
Thomas Duggan, 10 years. Duggan, 45, born in County Cork and father of six children, came to the attention of British authorities when, as a school teacher in Ballincollig, County Cork, he was accused of teaching Irish patriotism to his students, which resulted in him losing his school teacher status. He immigrated to America and joining the Confederate Army with the sole objective of learning the art of war, which he took back with him to Ireland for the uprising. He was arrested during a Fenian meeting in Moxley's public house, Carrigohan, Cork.
John Golden, 5 years. Golden, 23, born in Kells, County Kerry, at the young age of 20, was already a respected Fenian in the Kells Valley community. He took part in the Fenian raid on Kell's Coast Guard in search of munitions to help bolster the uprising. A warrant for his arrest was issued by the British authorities after a tip-off by an informer. He was arrested in Cork Harbour while attempting to escape to America. During his trial in Tralee, his heavily pregnant mother walked the 40 miles from Kells Valley to Tralee to see her son in the dock. The following day, she made the return trip on foot, where her baby was born that night.
However, due to public backlash in Ireland and America on the severity of the men's sentences, followed by petitions to the British government by several international luminaries sympathetic to the Irish cause, including John Amnesty Nolan, Karl Marx, and founder of the Irish Home Rule League, Isaac Butt, those Fenians sentenced to death had their sentence commuted to life in jail, while poet John Boyle O'Reilly's death sentence, due to his young age, was commuted to 20 years. But there would be no such support or sympathy for the imprisoned Fenians from the Catholic Church in Ireland. And with the Bishop of Kerry citing Fenianism as a godless conspiracy, while threatening God's curse on the imprisoned men.
God's heaviest curse, his withering, blasting, blighting curse.
The imprisoned men were also refused the sacraments, while in Rome, Pope Pius openly condemned the Fenian movement by name, also accusing it of giving Karl Marx the key to the front door of Ireland. Imprisoned Fenian leader Charles Kickham, unimpressed with the Catholic Church's apathy towards the Fenians, grumbled.
Time was when we had wooden chalices and golden priests, but now we have golden chalices and wooden priests.
As the military and civilian Fenians languished in various jails throughout Ireland and England, a day never goes by without them uttering in vain the names of those informers and spies who led them and Ireland down this dark, murky road. The uprising no more, and with Fenian movement racked with informers and spies, the imprisoned Fenians await their fate. Part 2, Solitary Confinement. England, September 1867. Nearly 2 years have passed since the failed uprising. The Fenian prisoners are still being held in various jails across Ireland and England, such as Mountjoy, Portsmouth, Chatham, Dartmoor, Portland, Pentonville, and Millbank. Considered the worst for its inhumane treatment of prisoners, such as torture and solitary confinement. On solitary confinement, Charles Dickens wrote,
"Either Maud announce it as a secret punishment which slumbering humanity is yet roused up to stay. I hesitated once, debating with myself whether, if I had the power of saying yes or no, I would allow it be tried in certain cases where the terms of imprisonment were short, but now I solemnly declare that with no rewards or honours could I walk a happy man beneath the open sky by day, or lie me down upon my bed at night with a consciousness that one human creature, for any length of time, no matter what, lay suffering this unknown punishment in his silent cell, and the cause, or I consenting to it, in the least degree."
It was Millbank where seven Fenians had died from torture, while four had committed suicide, and several had gone insane. Fenian leader Jeremiah O'Donovan Rossa spent 123 days on bread and water in a darkened cell, and 34 days with his hands manacled behind his back. Rossa would later write of his time in Millbank.
They prohibited us from speaking in our mother tongue, even on the days when we were allowed to talk. They called our native language slang. Thomas Duggan of Ballincollig was severely reprimanded once for speaking in his native tongue and threatened with severe punishment if he repeated the offence.
Fenian poet John Boyle O'Reilly, also imprisoned in Millbank, attempted to escape, and when recaptured for punishment was placed in solitary confinement for a month on bread and water. He was later transferred to Chatham Jail and then to Portsmouth Jail, from where he attempted another escape, but was again recaptured and again placed in solitary confinement for a month on bread and water. But it was Dartmoor Jail where O'Reilly witnessed man's inhumanity to man. When during another unsuccessful escape attempt, while hiding in a field outside the jail, he stumbled upon a pile of human bones. The bones, he would later learn, belonged to French and American prisoners of the war captured during England's war against America and France in 1812. They'd been mowed down in a mass escape attempt and their bodies dug into the field as fertilizer. O'Reilly and some of his fellow prisoners, as a sign of respect for the massacred men, erected a cairn on the spot where he had stumbled across the bones. Meanwhile, back in Ireland, spurned on by the John Amnesty Nolan's campaign to release all Fenian prisoners, several wives of imprisoned Fenians formed their own amnesty group. They held marches, drew up petitions, wrote letters to politicians and newspapers exposing the harsh, brutal regime their husbands were suffering at the hands of their captors. But their pleas would fall on deaf ears, and the barbarity continued. Part 3. Transportation. England, late September 1867. The word the imprisoned Fenians had most feared. Transportation. With the campaign for Irish Home Rule, including calls for an amnesty for the imprisoned Fenians, gaining international attention, the British government, afraid should the rebels be eventually set free and then regroup, select 45 civilian and 17 military Fenians for transportation. Their destination? The Swan River Penal Colony in Western Australia. Dennis Cashman, on hearing the news he was about to be transported to Western Australia, in his diary wrote,
"I received the news with a very bad grace and protested in the strongest terms against being sent, but recollecting that I had no voice in the matter and that go I should. I strove to make the most of it and drown the bitter feeling which filled my breast by fiercely working at, or rather tearing, the tough choir. I really felt wretched. The thought of being sent 14,000 miles away from my dear wife and children, from all that I loved on earth, with the fact staring at me in the face that I should not again for years see them, caused me to feel an acute agony that I never before felt and plunged my whole being into the deepest melancholy."
And so it was. A mustering of bold Fenian men from various prison hellholes across Ireland and England to Portland Jail overlooking the English Channel, in preparation to board the last convict ship to leave English shores, the Hougoumont. Meanwhile, back in County Waterford, Dennis Cashman's wife Kate and her three children prepare to travel to England in the hope of seeing her husband before he boards the convict ship for Western Australia. Portland Jail, October 7th, 1867. Onset of winter. Grey clouds like puffs of smoke gather over the English Channel. A mustering of common criminals, including the Fenian prisoners, gather in the jail's exercise yard in preparation to board the convict ship. After being checked by the jail surgeon, they're placed in manacles and under guard, paraded down to Portland Bill Harbour. Above clifftops leading down to the harbour, British Army snipers armed with Snider Enfield rifles watch nervously over the Fenian prisoners. Should there be a rescue attempt by a rogue band of Fenians still operating in the English mainland? As the parade of convicts approaches the wharf in preparation to board barges to ferry them to the Hougoumont, a small crowd had gathered on the wharf to farewell their loved ones. Suddenly, from out of the crowd rushed a barefoot woman. She dives at the chained feet of a Fenian prisoner and in an Irish accent yells out,
"He's my brother! Don't take him away from his family! Please! I beg you!"
"Remove that hysterical woman before I have her arrested!"
Portland Roads, October 12th, 1867. And so it was. On that bleak autumn day, 62 Irish political prisoners, along with 218 common criminals, ready themselves for the 14,000-mile voyage to the other side of the least unknown world. Portland Roads, October 12th, 1867. The convict ship raised its anchors and hoisted its sails while standing watching from the shore with her three children is Dennis Cashman's wife, Kate, too late to farewell her husband. Meanwhile, in the hold of the convict ship, poet John Boyle O'Reilly recites to his Fenian comrades his poem.
Farewell. Oh, how hard and how sad 'tis to speak. That last word of parting, forever to break. The fond ties and affection that cling around the heart, from home and from friends and from country to part. But 'tis harder when parted to try to forget, though it grieves to remember, 'tis vain to regret. The sad word must be spoken and memory's spell. Now steers o'er me sadly, farewell, oh farewell.
Production of this podcast series was supported by the Government of Ireland's Immigrant Support Programme. Historical research and writing by Peter Murphy and Margot O'Byrne. Narrated by Jennifer McGrath, John McCarthy and Dr. Daryl Milo. Music performed and recorded by John Clare, Kieran O'Sullivan and John Reid. Recorded at Wits End Studios, Fremantle, Western Australia. Technical production by Alan Dawson. Post-production by Josephine Hayes. On behalf of Fenians, Fremantle and Freedom, we thank all those who participated in the series and for their ongoing support.